seeking volunteers for the 4th Annual Upper Delaware Litter Sweep, April 14th through the 30th. They need individuals, students, groups, and businesses to help spring clean landscapes in 15 New York and Pennsylvania townships bordering the Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River. Council litter leaders will provide volunteers with a location, supplies, and volunteer t-shirts. More information at 845-252-3022 or upperdelawarecouncil.org. Paid for by the Upper Delaware Council.
It's Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR. And here, on the third to last day of our fun drive, we need to hear from you because it is our spring fun drive and we're trying to end it. Give what you can. Go to WJFFradio.org or give us a call at 845-482-4141. I'm Jason, and I'm here with Jeff. Jeff, thank you so much for being here with me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Great to be with you today.
So this is an interesting time of the day. This is, we're now at 6 o'clock. This is when we get into the local edition. So we transition from the national and global news that we get from NPR, and then we get into these local conversations here. So what do you think? Do you ever check out the local news here?
Of course, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Radio Catskill is so great. It just brings you know, it's a unique place where you can get all the updates really that are out there. I mean, it's always surprising and you know, great to see, you know, how much you cover. I mean, it really, you know, it's very, very comprehensive. I mean, you really keep up with the pulse of what's going on in the community. It just feels very much like a centerpiece of the community that just kind of, you know, is kind of a glue, you know, to, you know, plugged into all the cool things that are happening. And, you know, and sometimes the unfortunate things like the weather events and we've been victim of a couple times, but you know,
I was hired to be the program director now, almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And the goal was at the time there was several goals, but like it was kind of understood, like we need more local content, we need more local news. And it was like down the road, we're going to have regular local news.
Right.
And it wasn't entirely clear how best to do that, to transition and build that up. And it was the pandemic that pushed us up against the wall and said, okay, now we're doing it. And we just started doing it. And we're doing a lot with a very few people. We've got a great powerhouse team with the folks on staff. With Tim hosting Chatskill and me and Patricio hosting this, and Patricio doing a lot of the organizing and booking, Tim doing a lot of organizing and booking. We also have interns, journalism interns that come on when we can get a grant for the interns. And then we have all of our news partners in the community, all the other publications that we chat with to get the news.
Plugged in.
It really does take like a whole community to make this happen.
And being part of the board has given me that appreciation too. And you know, we're talking about that before.
You see some of the stuff under the hood.
You see the extent of the connections and we really are plugged into, you know, what's going on and in the community. It's a centerpiece, you know?
So if you appreciate having local news here every evening, we need you to support this. If you appreciate it having it every morning, it's like 7 days a week we've got local news on here. And every weekday we've got 1.5 hours of local news and talk and conversations here. And whatever news show you listen to, it doesn't have to be the local edition just because I happen to be here doing it. It's all right if you really like Chatskill, because I really like Chatskill and the job that Tim Bruno does. So whatever local news you get that you like, that you listen to here, call now. Support the station at 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org and make your donation that way. We're 75% of our goal. The fund drive ends on Saturday. We need to finish raising another almost $14,000. So you think we can do it?
I definitely think we can do it. We always have a strong finish. And, you know, I know there's people out there who maybe, you know, have forgotten, you know, myself today. I had forgotten, Jason. And I just went online, did it, you know, really easily. It's quick. It's simple and it helps us a lot.
Well, thanks for remembering. You know, that's convenient too.
I think there's other people like me out there. So, you know, let's all remember and just help us close out strong here.
That's great. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll get started with the local edition. Thanks so much for being here, Jeff.
My pleasure.
Call us now 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. Local edition starts in just one moment. This is Radio Catskill.
Having the conversation with your child about substance use is just as important as buying their school supplies. Vapes, including batteries, cannabis, and alcohol, are prohibited on school grounds. And using over-the-counter and prescribed medications must be arranged with your child's school health office. More information and resources available at cccsos.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hi, my name is Samuel O'Hurst Kessler. I'm a producer on the Planet Money podcast.
My name is Claudia Pescuta, and I'm a supervising editor on NPR's Morning Edition.
My name is Sachi Kobayashi, and I'm a director of collaborative philanthropy at NPR.
My name is Devin Meller. I'm the operations manager for NPR's New York Bureau. My high school creative writing teacher introduced me to public radio.
I'm jokingly what's called a backseat baby.
I did not grow up listening to public radio, but I discovered it at some point and fell in love with the news coverage and shows like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
I got my introduction to radio by working at WXPN in Philadelphia. And on my first day, I realized that everyone there was there to serve the listeners, no one else.
However you found public radio, you can be part of the community that makes it possible.
Please give to this station today. Here's how.
Support Radio Catskill during our Spring Fund Drive. Give now at wjffradio.org.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And coming up tonight, we have our regular check-in with Philip Pantuso of the Times. You need to give us the latest news in our region. Phil Pantuso is the editor of the Hudson Valley Bureau of the Times Union. And I did not speak to him earlier today. Patricio Romayo did, and I thank Patricio so much for making sure that happened so we could have Philip on tonight. So let's just get into the news. This is the Local Edition.
These results were released during Poughkeepsie's Common Council meeting earlier this week. It's the latest city in the Hudson Valley to conduct what's called a housing vacancy survey or study as a prelude, essentially, to voting to declare a housing emergency and then opting into the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. The Poughkeepsie study found that in qualifying rental units, there was about 4% vacancy, 3.96% to be exact. And I say qualifying units because the only ones that matter for the purposes of this survey are ones that would be protected by the Emergency Tenant Protection Act, otherwise known as rent stabilization. So those are buildings that were built before 1974 and that contain six or more units. So as you alluded to, the next step would be to vote to declare on a housing emergency, which sounds like the city is going to hold that vote in May. And then if they do that, they can opt into the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. And that kickstarts the whole process that other cities, including Newburgh and Kingston, have gone through, forming a rent guidelines board, which would need to be approved by the State Division of Homes and Community Renewal. And then that rent guidelines board would be able to set rents and other guidelines for rental units in the properties that are under the auspices of the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. Now, you mentioned what can the city do to try to appease landlords. TBD on that front. Every time any city has passed any kind of tenant protection, whether that was good cause eviction, which a lot of cities passed in 2020 and 2021, or recently rent stabilization, those bills have been challenged by landlords groups. Most notably in the Hudson Valley, a group that's called the Hudson Valley Property Owners Association. There isn't really anything to challenge yet in this instance in Poughkeepsie because they haven't actually declared the housing emergency and opted in to the ETPA. I would be pretty surprised. Let's just say if what's happened in other cities is a precedent for Poughkeepsie, if and when Poughkeepsie does declare a housing emergency and opt into rent stabilization, you'll probably see a challenge to that in pretty short order. And oftentimes, the landlords groups that have challenged the specifically the rent stabilization legislation have criticized or taken aim at the vacancy study, essentially suggesting or arguing that the way the study was conducted was improper in some form or fashion. And the exact argument has evolved based on the particulars of each municipality's study. In some cases, the city conducted a study. In other cases, they contracted with a consultancy. That's what Poughkeepsie did. They contracted with a group that had also conducted the same vacancy study in the city of Ossining down in Westchester County. It's basically just step one right now, and any sort of challenge and anything that any sort of further steps essentially need to wait until after the May Common Council meeting.
What has been sort of the reaction or have advocates, you know, tenants advocates been saying about this?
They pretty much, the tenant advocates and the Common Council pretty much uniformly praised this afterward. Poughkeepsie is probably not facing quite, like, housing prices haven't gone up there quite as much as they have in places like Kingston and Hudson, but there still is a real affordable housing crisis there. The city's recent housing needs assessment that was last completed in 2022 found that one in three renters there spends more than half their income on housing costs.
Wow.
And all the groups you would expect, For the Many, Housing Justice for All, praised Poughkeepsie for taking this step.
Right. So you mentioned other cities. How have sort of rent stabilization measures worked in other cities? And you mentioned a little bit, what could this mean for Poughkeepsie?
Yeah, haltingly, I think Kingston was the first city north of the New York City suburbs to opt in to the ETPA. And that was almost 2 years ago now. And just last month, I think it was last month, there was finally a ruling in a court challenge there that upheld the rent stabilization there and upheld the first measure that the city's rent guidelines board took, which was to issue a rent reduction in rent stabilized units of 15%. That may still actually be challenged up to the Court of Appeals by the Hudson Valley Property Owners Association. But because that decision was unanimous, the Court of Appeals, basically they would have to appeal to the Court of Appeals to hear it. And in most cases where there's a unanimous ruling, they don't take that up. In Kingston, anyway, it seems pretty settled. Newburgh is the other city in the Mid-Hudson Valley that has opted into rent stabilization. That is on hold right now because landlords sued over allegations that its vacancy study, which was conducted by the city's planning department, was based on flawed data. So that is now working its way through the courts. I believe Newburgh, while they've formally declared a housing emergency and have opted into the rent stabilization, I don't think they've even formed their rent guidelines board yet, and thus they haven't really taken any steps, whether that's issuing a rent freeze, which is one move that other rent guidelines boards further downstate have done, or a step further in issuing a rent reduction, which is, you know, what Kingston did. So in Newburgh, we're kind of on hold, you know, pending what happens with the court case there.
And in keeping on housing, can you talk about the tentative housing deal that's happening in the budget, which is it's a fluid situation with the budget now going on. I heard even today there was a cyber attack that sort of could delay things in the budget. What are some of the biggest issues the tenant advocates have with the concessions with the good clause eviction?
Yeah, so good clause is something I mentioned just a few minutes ago. A bunch of cities passed that in 2020 and 2021. Those were all challenged in court. And pretty much every time the court has ruled in the favor of landlords challenging the law, saying that state law supersedes local law in this case. And so that shifted a bunch of advocacy attention toward passing a state version of good cause eviction. And we got a preview of what that might look like earlier this week. It sounds like it's going to be part of the budget. And it's a fairly watered down version of good cause eviction. The policy is not finalized and remains the subject of a lot of debate internally in both the state assembly and state senate, particularly among the Democratic conferences, where there's a lot of division over what exactly good cause on a state level should look like. But basically, the proposal is expected to allow what's called a flexibility to modify the version of good cause eviction that the state is proposing for New York City specifically. So there's a version of good cause eviction that is going to go into place for New York City. And if this policy passes, there is going to be an opt-in for all other municipalities in the state, and they will have the flexibility to modify that. Basically, there's going to be like a template version of good cause eviction in New York City. And then upstate cities can decide to opt into that and then change sort of details about it that maybe more suit their either political makeup or demographics or what have you. Now, there's a lot of anger, but it seems like both sides are unhappy with this right now. Landlords have been fighting good cause eviction since it was initially proposed, arguing that it doesn't give them flexibility, particularly for small landlords, to charge market rates in certain places or to deal with tenants who are in arrears with their rent. The tenant advocates who have been pushing for good cause eviction on the state level for the last couple of years, and some of the supporters of stronger good cause eviction legislation in the state Senate and state assembly, would rather have seen, I think, an opt out. Basically, like, this passes and it becomes the default standard, and you would have to opt out as an upstate locality rather than opt in. But a compromise like this, people on both sides feeling a little like they had to give something up, that probably makes it more likely that it's going to get done. There's this flexibility to modify clause that I mentioned earlier, which would allow upstate cities to change the template New York City law, which right now only applies to landlords with at least 10 units. That's probably going to be changed most places, because there aren't a lot of landlords in a place like Kingston or Newburgh or Beacon or wherever that have more than 10 units. There might be, I mean, probably one hand, the number of landlords that would apply to in any of these, in any given smaller upstate city. That's one thing you could see lowered by this flexibility to modify clause. Maybe, let's say, Kingston opts into good cause eviction and changes it so that it applies to landlords with 5 or more units or whatever. But yeah, as you said at the top, this is still in flux. The budget is a moving process. They're working on passing it today in a series of, I think it's like 9 different bills that, yeah, got delayed yesterday by a cyber attack. It's a whole mess.
Yeah. And this just remind folks exactly what is the good clause law. This is a legislation that aims to protect tenants from eviction and excessive rent increases. But landlords can still evict, but they have to have good cause. With situations where tenant fails to pay rent and engage in behavior that infringes on the use of the apartment or housing. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And this policy, or this proposal, the way it's written right now, it would likely require landlords to offer a lease renewal to their tenants in all but extreme circumstances. And it would require landlords to provide justification for any rent hikes above a certain rate. That rate is probably going to be variable depending on which cities opt in and how they modify their version of the law.
How can ongoing court cases in Albany influence future tenant protection laws in other New York towns?
Yeah, right now, good cause eviction, most cities have stopped trying to pass that because it keeps losing in court. And Kingston, in particular, I think, rescinded its own good cause eviction law to prevent facing a court challenge. The challenge that's furthest along is Albany, the city of Albany's good cause eviction law. That is currently before the Court of Appeals right now. That could, depending on what the Court of Appeals finds, that could reinstate the Albany good cause eviction law, which is more similar to the ones that were passed in Hudson Valley cities like Kingston, Newburgh, and Beacon, and which crucially is a lot stronger than this version that's being proposed in the state legislature. However, I think most people don't expect the Court of Appeals to reinstate the law. In pretty much every court so far, again, as I've mentioned, the court has sided against tenant advocates and against the cities in these cases and for the landlords. And the justification has always been that state law supersedes local law on this policy. That Albany case, that Albany decision could it would have pretty strong implications for the other versions of the law that have passed at the local level if the Court of Appeals rules in favor of the city of Albany. But I think we're more likely to see the state proposal pass before we get a decision from the Court of Appeals. And I think the Court of Appeals decision is probably going to be against the city of Albany's version of good cause eviction anyway.
That's definitely something to watch. Let's move on to the jails. Orange County extended its contract with New York Correct Care Solutions, which provides medical services at the county jail. And this is happening after, you said, the third person died at the jail under the current care's watch. So what exactly is happening here?
Yeah, so this a couple of weeks ago, we reported on the death of a man named Jairo Navarro at the jail. He was 30 years old, and he was the third person to die at Orange County Jail since 2021. All of those deaths occurred while this company, New York Correct Care Solutions, was the contracted medical provider at the jail. And so we were just wondering, did New York Correct Care Solutions, were they still under contract when this third person died? Because technically their last contract expired at the end of last year, and this death occurred in March. Orlana Bellamy made some inquiries, and she found that the county legislature did extend the contract temporarily, pending opening a new request for proposals to either to get new bids, basically, for who's going to provide medical services at Orange County Jail. New York Correct Care Solutions has been there since 2021, and they, in the two prior deaths, which happened in 2021 and 22, a state commission investigated those, and in both cases found that New York Correct Care Solutions could have done more to prevent the deaths. They also ordered Orange County to essentially conduct a review of its contract with New York Correct Care Solutions and make sure that they were living up to what they were contracted or being paid to do. We're told that Orange County, the sheriff's office, did conduct that investigation and found that New York Correct Care Solutions was in good standing, despite at least some amount of culpability in these two prior deaths. And that's why they decided to extend the contract. But this third death, which I should make clear, at this point has not been linked to New York Correct Care Solutions in any way. We're still waiting. It's still being investigated. But a third person to die in such short order certainly raises questions, I think, about what they're doing there, particularly because New York Correct Care Solutions is a subsidiary of this group called WellPath, which is a big private equity-backed company that provides medical services at a bunch of correctional facilities all across the United States and somewhat randomly in Australia. And they've been the subject of quite a lot of critical reporting from the likes of The Atlantic and CNN, and also locally from LOHA down in Westchester County, because they also provide services in Westchester County Jail. And there've been some deaths and some other injuries under their watch down there as well. So renewed scrutiny on them for sure. And we'll certainly be tracking that RFP process and seeing if Orange County gives these services back to them again.
What are some of the potential consequences for Orange County if the new request for proposals does not lead to improved healthcare services at the jail?
What they would say is that New York Correct Care Solutions had the best bid, that they said that they provide the most comprehensive services for the most competitive price. You know, it's really on them to make sure, on the county to make sure that New York Correct Care Solutions is actually living up to its contract. But we also have to wait and see who else bids for these services, right? It's been now 3+ years that New York Correct Care Solutions has been in Orange County jails, or in the Orange County jail, sorry. So we're not really sure who else is going to be bidding for it, but we're definitely going to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, and they say I looked at just the website just for now, how many jails they do take care of. There's a lot throughout the country. The Correct Care Solutions take care of. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's something like 550 total.
Yeah,
somewhere around there.
You mentioned other reporting, but I know obviously your article focuses on the Orange County and Hudson Valley. But Do you know if other places are experiencing things like what's happening in Orange County, the lack of care, prisoners dying in jail?
What's happened in Orange County and Westchester County does not seem to be unique. There's a really good Atlantic investigation a couple of years ago that looked into the bigger problem of private equity getting involved in healthcare. And it's what you would think, and it's similar to healthcare more broadly. When you have private equity backing and you have this sort of profit motive, it pushes you to cut certain corners and to look for quote unquote operational efficiencies that can come at the expense of quality of care in a lot of cases. There's all kinds of studies showing a correlation there. At least in many of the jails where WellPath operates, the quality of care and services is just not as high as it is from other providers or as it was previously. I encourage people who want to learn more about that to check out that Atlantic investigation, which is linked in our article.
Yeah, definitely. It's a troubling thing to hear because it's not the first time I'm hearing this. I just interviewed a person who's in the Sullivan County correctional facility, and he's talked about the lack of care. I'm not sure what company is taking care of the Sullivan County correctional facility, but we talked about the lack of care that they're getting, even basic care, even like normal, like wellness checks and things like that, or checking moles on your leg or on your face, something like that has been non-existent sometimes for them. So it's a little troubling to hear that. Philip, again, thank you so much. Anything else for this article or?
That's it. Yep.
That's it. Okay. Philip, thank you so much for talking to us, letting us know what's happening in the Hudson Valley and what's happening on the pages of the Times Union in the Hudson Valley Bureau. Again, thank you so much, Philip. We'll talk to you again next week.
Always good to be with you.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you so much, Patricio. And thanks, as always, to Philip Pantuso. Remember, all those articles they talked about are up now at timesunion.com. That's going to do it for the local edition tonight. Patricio will be back here for more local edition tomorrow evening. I want to thank you so much for listening. Do keep listening on air, or we're always live streaming online at wjffradio.org. And of course, you're always welcome. You're always able at any time, even when there isn't a fund drive going on, to make your donation to Radio Catskill, to keep the station going, to keep the local edition on air. Here in our area, you can always make a donation at wjffradio.org. But you really should do it now, because we need your help ending our spring fund drive. Spring fund drive's coming to an end, but it's not going to come to an end without you. We need your help. We need your support. Please give now. 845-482-4141 is the number to call if you want to do it over the phone, or just go to wjffradio.org. That's wjffradio.org. And I just checked WJFFradio.org real quick to see if we've gotten any more donations. And we have. Big thank you to Anonymous, making a donation at WJFFradio.org. Now we've heard from 268 supporters. 268 donations have come in so far this fund drive, getting us. We've raised $41,000+ towards our $55,000 goal. 75% of the way there, but you see, we've only got until Saturday to make this happen. And to help make it happen on Saturday, we've got our Tiny Porch concert. And that's going from 10 to 4 on the porch right here at our studios in Liberty, New York on Route 52. So as much as I'd like you to call now at 845-482-4141 or donate at wjffradio.org, you're also welcome to come out in person and make your donation to help end the fund drive on Saturday. But yeah, we've got just under $14,000 to raise in the next couple days. It has to end on Saturday. And well, you're going to have live music on the porch and a free beer. We'll have a pizza available to purchase as well. Come on out to the Tiny Porch concert happening on Saturday. This is Radio.